Welcome back to Your Valley Sports Plug. It's the Heat Check Podcast live for May 20th, 2025, a beautiful Tuesday evening here in sunny Arizona. I am your host, Chris Patrick, joined this evening by my man and co-host, Mr. Benjamin. How's it going, bro?
Chris, doing great. What an eventful couple of days it's been. It just seems like we did pass the outlet. I mean, technically it was just a week ago. But damn, there's been a lot of things going on in the Valley, and I'm ready to dive into it. How are you doing tonight, man?
Mike, I'm going to be honest. I'm tired. It's been a week. It's only Tuesday. But also, just being a Valley sports fan can be so draining. There's a lot of news here locally. There's a lot of news nationally. I don't think we're going to get into all of the things we could possibly talk about today, but we're going to do our best to take a bite out of it. We got the Cardinals schedule being released last week, so we know every game. It's probably a good thing we gave VSP Tallman the week off, because he would want to go game by game, do the full breakdown and predictions. But no, we got to wait till August. We do that in August on the Heat Check podcast in person. We got Phoenix Suns news. Josh Bartlestein named in a lawsuit. You know, Suns are really challenging the no such thing as bad press theory. Don't necessarily love it. They have a searching for their new head coach. They've narrowed it down to a very small list of nine names. KD is still in the rumor mill. A lot of people, you know, putting mock trades together, wondering where he's going to go. Of course, Giannis a couple weeks ago, and you know, rumors were that he was gonna want out of Milwaukee, so that's kind of, I think, throwing a wrench into some of those plans. So we're gonna break down some of those rumors, and then your Arizona Diamondbacks, the only show in town right now, looking decent. I think they've won 7 out of their last 11 or so, winning the last two series. They won the first game against the Dodgers last night for this series in LA. We'll see if they can do it again tonight, but some more news there. But first, before we get into all that, I would ask you to please, if you're watching this video live or on the playback, right here on YouTube, like and subscribe. Make sure you ring that notification bell so you can find out when we're going live. We do a live stream every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. right here on YouTube. Next day, the playback is available on YouTube immediately, but also next day on all podcast streaming services for audio. That is Spotify, Apple Podcasts, anywhere that you find audio podcasts, you'll find us there. And you can also keep up with us at AZ_VSP on Instagram, X, TikTok, and so much more. Just find our links in the description below. Our link tree will take you where you need to go. Or if all else fails and you just can't remember that, go to Google, type in Valley Sports Plug, and you'll find us there as well. But Mike, let's go ahead and get into this Arizona Cardinals schedule release to start things off. Released it in rap form. What was it? Mac Wilson Sr., aka Rocket Ship, I think, released his track 18 Bars.
Rocket Ship, aka Mac Wilson Sr. Yeah, Chris, I know. Once this hit the airwaves, and there were some rumors coming out that it was going to be grandiose and it was going to be one to watch out for, coming from the national media outlets, right? And when you think of it truly at the end of the day, this is creative, right? Is it the best rap we've ever heard, Chris? Just right off the rip, is it the best rap we've ever heard?
Objectively, no.
Not even close, but it was creative. It has this awesome visual that we got going on in the background here, and you got a bunch of different guys who came to show support for Mac Wilson Sr. as well. I mean, you see Zaven Collins right there, James Conner, Paris Johnson, Marvin Harrison Jr. This team is getting united quickly to start before training camp even begins, and it's awesome to see. And now, like I was saying, I think I'm more so positive in regard to the situation, how creative it was, right? But some might say it came off a little bit corny, but I'm not going to go that route, man, because I think, you know, you look around the league, has anybody else done something like that? I don't know if I've seen anything in the past couple of years. And we know how crazy all of the teams get nowadays. And it seems like the one that people always go back to and pinpoint was just something so simplified as the Tennessee Titans going out into town, asking people what the mascot or the team was of a picture of it. And people weren't even close.
So, right. Yeah.
I didn't mind it. And hey, if you want to give a platform to one of your guys who's supposed to be, you know, your stout linebacker who had his first year last year with the Arizona Cardinals, had a great season, is going to be asked to step up and be a leader of this team, give him that outlet to spit some bars. Why not?
Yeah, it's kind of funny how the whole schedule, NFL schedule release has been part of the offseason hype train and keeping the NFL in the conversation year round. Many teams are getting pretty creative with it. It seems like that like man on the street interview one has been a popular style. Did you happen to see what the Buffalo Bills did?
They did the AI one, right?
Yeah.
They were basically Josh Allen. I've seen a bunch of videos with Josh Allen in their practice facility, and they have a basketball hoop and he's just shooting around, and they like called him and they're like, what should we do? What should we do? And he's like, just use AI. Everybody's doing it. And here comes the answer, Allen Iverson coming out, and they were trying to get him to say go Bills. And all he would say was go Josh Allen. I loved it. Yeah. It's, you give credit to teams for the creativity this time of year. Cause you know, everybody's just chomping at the bit for football to come back. And we're still a ways away, unfortunately.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, it's fun. It's fan service at the end of the day. It's not anything that's going to, I think people are hanging their hat on, like, that's the reason why. And, you know, tied it in here locally, it's like, I would say, yeah, corny, hokey, sure. I felt that way. But at the end of the day, it wasn't the worst rap I'd ever heard. I think the trend of pro athletes trying to also launch their music career simultaneously has been an interesting thing. I'm not gonna knock it though. I mean, guys can have hobbies. That's fine. Have a hobby. You know, can't sit here and be a hypocrite like I never tried to be a rapper. But I think the biggest issue I had, I can live with the rap. I thought it was cool. They sent out boxes, like almost like merch boxes of sorts to various media figures. I saw a lot of the guys in 98.7 got like the t-shirt, like the 18 bars press pass, and you can see there on this graphic they had a whole merch line of the 18 bars song and everything. My only issue, Mike, was that when all these other teams were dropping their schedule, because it was like 5:30 or something on whatever day it was, Tuesday or Wednesday last week, this graphic that we're showing here was impossible to find. You had to listen to the song, and all I wanted to do was see the dates and the opponents, and they couldn't do it simultaneously. It wasn't until hours later that we finally got a graphic, and I don't even think it was the Cardinals that put it out. I think I had to catch like PHNX or one of those other local outlets putting the graphic out. So I was like, man, that was the only thing that frustrated me the most.
No, I get it, because what, especially at the NFL draft when they announce the day of the schedule, we're all licking our chops to see, you know, who's going to be our home teams that we're going up against. For us specifically, where's a possibility where we might want to go and travel to go see, you know, the Bird Gang take on some teams? And I think they were just more so worried about getting some extra streams for Mac Wilson Sr. Because, you know, they put this out on Spotify and, you know, all of the streaming sites too. So he probably made a decent penny. I don't know how the streams go nowadays. I'm sure it's 100,000, you get $5. So he probably didn't make too much money. But here's my other critique, Chris. This is my one critique I would say about it. In general, in the rap that he's actually doing, I thought that he would go in order. Like, you're literally going to like rap down the schedule. It's like, all right, now we start off in New Orleans, then home back to Carolina or whatever. It's like the second team he said was, we're off to Tampa Bay, and that's week 13. So it's like just jumping all over the place. Now I'm nitpicking in regard to that, but as somebody who might have done music back in the day too, if I was doing an actual schedule release, this is the first thing that's going out to the people to see how things are breaking down, I might do things in order, but that's just me.
Well, that's a really good point. I guess I didn't even realize, because when I was listening to the song, I didn't also have the graphic there with me, as so many others didn't. But what I was going to say is the fact that, what was I going to say? Mike, what was I going to say?
The can't fact help that you they, there, man.
Yeah, I don't know. You're right. The fact that they didn't get an order makes it confusing. Oh, I remember. We already knew who the opponents were going to be. If you were just going to do a release about who the opponents were going to be, we knew that months ago. We knew that at the end of last season. But instead, it's supposed to be the schedule release. And like, I think I only listened to it once, maybe twice, but it wasn't like September 25th, we're at Seattle or whatever. You know, it was like, which I mean, that probably would have been more corny if he had literally done like date, opponent, whatever. But like, so it was at least somewhat clever. But yeah, I agree. Not going in order is a little whack. But hey, points for creativity. I wonder if Michael Bidwell charged him for the studio time and the camera crew, or if that was paid by the Cardinals.
Oh my God, you know that he probably did. And they charged him for the sodas that he gave out to his friends that were in the recording studio as well. But yeah, hey, I mean, now the schedule's out. Now we start to dissect. I can't wait for August at this point. And you're probably right in saying that it's probably good that VSP Tallman isn't here, because you know he's ready to break down every single week. But there's a lot. That's the other thing too. I did see every Arizona media outlet here the next day after did schedule predictions. I think that's just way, way too early. I know that things kind of ebb and flow as, you know, as we get closer towards training camp, but I want to be as close to the season beginning for me to really have pinpointed everything. We know who our starter is going to be. And the other big thing is we know who might have gotten injured during training camp that might be missing multiple weeks or possibly being out for an entire season. We're knocking on wood that that doesn't happen, but it unfortunately does. So me trying to go out there and claim that the Cardinals are going to win 13 games this year right now before guys haven't gone through training camp is kind of crazy. I like our model, how we do it. I like us sitting down right before the season starts so we can do all of our research, gather all of our eggs, put them in the basket, and then hand them to the people. Because at the end of the day, too, I don't want to be going back and forth on my schedule predictions. I'm a man of integrity. What I say is what goes. Is it going to be right? No. 99% of the time, it's not. But I don't want to say this and then go back to that just as things has moved on. But that's just me.
No, I'm right there with you. And like, that's why we luckily we have a 2/3 majority rule here. So we keep Tallman at bay. But it's like nobody's going to draft their fantasy team right now. If you are, that's just absolutely ridiculous. We always wait till like the second to last weekend before the season starts. Cause you're right. A lot could happen, you know, training camp, not even preseason games, but like a lot can happen in training camp. Guys do get injured. It's not impossible. And that can change the trajectory of the whole season. And like, of course, injuries will happen during the season and that changes things as well. But doing predictions closer to the season, I feel like definitely paints a more accurate picture. And I don't like exactly, I don't want mean to keep parroting everything you're saying, but you're so right. It's like, you don't want to flip flop and like right now be like, oh yeah, we're going to win 13 games. And then, you know, 100 days from now, right before the season starts, be like, maybe we're only going to win 9 or 10, you know? So kind of gets it a little shaky, but I'm sure when we get together this Saturday to record the Heat Check podcast in person for May, Tallman will inevitably bring it up and he will ask us if we want to do it and we will shoot him down. Make sure you tune in next week so you can see if this prophecy is fulfilled. I don't know. We're probably not going to touch on it now. I'm sure we'll talk about Brock Purdy getting a payday. He's a very well-paid game manager now. Jonathan Gannon was at the Kyler Murray charity softball game over the weekend, tripling down that Kyler's the guy, Kyler's his guy. So he's fully behind Kyler for this season. And then Mike, I just want to get your quick reaction because it was breaking news today, just NFL wide. What do you think about the NFL players being allowed to participate in flag football at the 2028 Olympics? Did you hear about this?
Yes, absolutely love it. Let's not go the route of the NBA for years and years where it was only college players allowed to go. Let's jump on other countries' throats right off the rip. Why not? Let's dominate flag football in the Olympics, make sure we shore up gold. That'll be a very, very interesting team to see who wants to be, you know, invested and who gets invited. I think there's going to be a lot of fanfare and probably want from some of these high profile players, if not the majority of them, because this is the first iteration ever for the Olympics to hold something like this. So we'll have to see as the years go on, you know, if the real high profile guys want to be a part of this, or if they think it's just kind of something that they don't want to be a part of because they have their off-season regimen. I'm sure there's still going to be guys who go through that same bout through this first system, but since it's so fresh and so new, it's going to be hard picking some of these guys. You know, who's going to who's going to be the guy at the helm for the quarterback position? Is it the guy who just won the Super Bowl, say if it was Jalen Hurts, or is it Patrick Mahomes, you know, the guy who's done it for a number of years in the league now? So those will be fun, fun conversations for us to have, but absolutely 100%. And it was awesome to see that all ownership were on the same page. The vote passed 32-0. So that's great, man. I love to see that.
I did not know about the unanimous vote. That is really cool. I think it's going to be fun. For me, I think what's going to be interesting is obviously you're going to expect the Team USA to steamroll, but it might, I mean, I don't want to say it might not be a total shellacking, but I think where it could get interesting is when you have guys who don't make the Team USA roster find a way to get on other countries' teams. Like, I could see Kyler playing for like the South Korean flag football team.
Yep. 100%. You know,
there's some German and Aussie guys who are in the NFL, and like where it's like, oh, my great grandmother was French, so I will be honorary French national player. But no, so it'll be fun. And I think honestly, some people might complain about that, and we see that a little bit in basketball, but it honestly, I think, makes it more competitive, which inherently will make it more fun. Because if Team USA is just going out there sweeping everyone 70-7 or whatever, it's not going to be as fun. But very, very curious to see and dive into that maybe a little bit more about like the rules and the structure as we get closer. But it sounds like we're good, 3 years away from the Summer Olympics there. And I think it's going to be in LA, right? It's here in America.
LA 2028. Ooh. What a great time to knock it out the park and start this. And yeah, that'll be awesome.
No, definitely looking forward to that. So like I said, kind of plug in a little bit for this weekend and next week, but be on the lookout for Heat Check Podcast. We're going to talk about a lot of odds and ends stuff. And we usually on the Heat Check Podcast, our monthly recording, we kind of talk more high level because, you know, the news cycle's quick here in the Valley. So we don't want to get too much in the nitty gritty, but it's a lot of fun. So tune in to that and let us know what you think in the comments. But Mike, got some Phoenix Suns news we got to get into. Yes, it seems like we're going to be talking about the Suns a lot more this offseason than maybe we have in years past. I think you wanted to start with the allegations, right? You were keeping tapped in on this?
Yeah, let's start with it. This is a very, very interesting situation that's come down for the Phoenix Suns, specifically for Phoenix Suns CEO Josh Bartelstein, the 35-year-old Michigan man. Guys, let's go back down memory lane for a second. You remember when Ishbia bought the team in 2022 for $4 billion, there's just a lot of bad blood and bad feelings in the ownership group that was previously there. And this franchise has been reeling ever since. If you
I fear that we may have lost Michael Benjamin. Not like permanently, just for the stream, but he'll be right back. But yeah, Josh Bartelstein was named as a plaintiff in this lawsuit filed with the United States District Court for the District of Arizona. And it says here, when Bartelstein asked plaintiff to reveal what Craig was saying, plaintiff explained that Craig had been telling others Josh Bartelstein is banging Sophie Cunningham in more explicit language. But obviously these are, you know, you can say these are just allegations, but it's really not great for a Suns organization that has been embroiled in these kinds of controversies. Welcome back, Michael.
You got to love a good old technical difficulty, right? When I kind of start riffing here. So you got to tell me kind of where did we leave off of?
So I just read what was on the screen here about the plaintiff revealing what Craig was saying about banging Sophie Cunningham, being kind of crude. I was just pointing out that these are just allegations, he said, I don't even know if she said anything, but he said, you know, an accusation being levied, but it's not good for an organization that's already been embroiled in a lot of this type of, you know, controversy.
Right. So, and that's what I was talking about. Since Ishbia bought the team in December of 2022, there's still been at least that we know of four different lawsuits accusing the franchise of discrimination since November of 2024. Right. So not even a calendar year, man. But so all of this stemmed from Former Suns security director Gene Traylor accusing the Suns of racial discrimination, harassment, and retaliation. And he said that they dismissed his safety concerns, which led to major breaches, including a situation with Brittany Griner, where she was harassed at an airport not long after her release from Russia, right? But Traylor had gave a presentation to management highlighting repeated alleged security lapses around the team, including failing security tests where plainclothes law enforcement officers were able to enter PHX Arena with guns and knives, right? So the claim is basically saying that Traylor brought all this information to the Suns, and for that, they dismissed it, and then they demoted him, right? But he also talked within the lawsuit, basically where Sophie Cunningham comes into play in regard to this, was that the vice president of security and risk management, Cornelius Craig, was spreading damaging information about him that could jeopardize the organization. And when I say him, I'm talking about Josh Bartlestein. Traylor recounts in the suit a conversation with Bartlestein where he claims that Craig had been telling people Josh Bartlestein is fucking Sophie Cunningham. It's crazy. So this... what's happened with the Sophie Cunningham situation is basically the tail end of what first happened last week, where this injunction kind of came forth and the Suns went after one of the attorneys representing Traylor, Shiri Wright, who they basically claimed, you know, she's been disciplined twice by the Supreme Court of Arizona for committing numerous violations of rules and professional conduct. She's currently serving a 2-year probation with the State Bar of Arizona. And then they basically talk once again about how these are just accusations. These allegations are delusional and categorically false. And after the reports came out yesterday about the alleged affair between Sophie Cunningham and Josh Bartlestein, communications executive Stacey Mitch issued a denial response today, which said the recent reports concerning Josh Bartlestein and Sophie Cunningham are entirely false and morally reprehensible. Let's absolutely be clear about the origins of these claims. So this is a really, really sticky situation to try and garner your true thoughts about this, because at the end of the day, I think, Chris, you were probably touching on it when I went dark for a second. These are allegations at the end of the day. I think more so what I'm more disappointed in regard to what's happening in the Suns front office and organization right now is going back to one of the first things I said, that this is the fourth different lawsuit that's come about in the past, 6 months? That's not a good track record. Sorry, mixing up my words here. And obviously, I mean, the Suns are a high profile organization with a lot of money floating around. So you just truly never know what is what. But this isn't good, man. With all the different things that have to go along with just the play of the Phoenix Suns, like we said, we're going to get into it. Finding a new head coach, the fourth one in 4 years, and trying to figure out what this roster is going to be. Now we still have to continue with these headaches. I just don't love it, man, no matter what happened. And if it did happen, I cannot align with it, obviously, because Josh Bartlestein is a married man. It's unacceptable. But yeah, just a bad look all the way around.
Yeah, I don't think it speaks kindly to the culture that we thought Ishbia was trying to build here. And obviously the not necessarily controversial, but the tabloidy, you know, New York Post, TMZ, what they're all going to report on is the Sophie Cunningham, Josh Bartlestein thing. Whether that's true or not, I think the greater concerns are being overshadowed in, you know, massive security failures, as well as, you know, accusations of racial discrimination. When you put it all together, it's just really bad. And to again, have the, like I think you said, fourth occurrence of something like this happening, it's just tighten up. You know, Ishbia was brought in to take over for a different owner who is forced out because he had similar, you know, sexual assault and creating an uncomfortable work environment, only to turn around and still be having these stories coming out of you know, Phoenix is definitely concerning, especially for an organization that isn't doing well on the basketball court right now either. Not to say any of those things are forgivable if the basketball team is doing well. I just think it means you're more under the microscope, and it's going to be amplified even more that like you're in a negative spotlight in every facet of your organization right now, and it's not going to reflect well on ownership or the management group. I don't know, man. Is there something in the Michigan water? It's interesting to me.
Which is scary, because what do we know? Brian Gregory is a Michigan man. Well, he's a Michigan State man. Josh Bartlestein is specifically a Michigan man. He played at the University of Michigan. There's just too many other factors that we need to be focusing on for this Phoenix Suns team, Chris. That's why this kind of just pisses me off. Like, what are we doing here, folks? I will say, I guess on a lighter note, if you want, this really is not a joking matter within this situation, right? These are damning allegations towards multiple people, right? Josh Bartlestein, who is a married man, Sophie Cunningham, who is trying to, you know, start a different part of her career as she's gone to Indiana. And I think there's very high hopes for that team and the Fever as well, obviously on the backs of Caitlin Clark. And this is the last thing I'm sure she wants to be trying to address as their season literally just started. I don't think it's fair for them, especially if it's if these allegations are not true. And like we said, at the end of the day, these are allegations right now. And a lot of people, I think, have come out and made the right statements that we're not going to try and dictate or find the answers online. We will let the court of law handle this situation. So we know how the news cycles go. This will be gone probably by the end of the week until there is some kind of verdict that comes out from this, you know, civil case that happens. But man, just it's Arizona sports. I know it's okay. It's Arizona sports, but it's just, I feel like professional sports continue to have these bad look situations happen. I mean, one of our last Heat Check podcasts, we had to talk about Michael Bidwell doing discrimination to his right-hand woman and that kind of stuff. So
yeah, I forgot about that. Wow.
You know, like these things always just find themselves in the limelight every couple of months. And unfortunately, it seems like it consistently is still happening in Arizona. So I'm knocking on wood on again. Hopefully it's not coming the Diamondbacks way anytime soon, because like we were saying, they still got some things to figure out as well on the actual ball field.
Good Lord, man. Are you right? And we're going to get into that. Honestly, they've been kind of the shining light. I took a bit of a dip last season, but they've been winning the past, you know, 3 or so years. They made the World Series, obviously huge. But the Phoenix Suns, man, I mean, they really got to get it together. And that's, you know, kind of like what I was saying at the beginning. I'm tired, man. Like, it's tiring seeing this type of news day in and day out. Like, there's a lot of, you know, it starts as the NBA season winds down and we're starting to head into the, you know, finishing out the playoffs and the finals and the offseason, conversations about what teams are going to look like next year start to happen. And a big part of that conversation today is about the end of the super team era, where we're not going to see any three superstar teams anymore, and that the Suns might have been the last super team to ever exist. Because I don't think we were truly a super team, because Bradley Beal played like a role player on his best day. But it's interesting that the Suns keep getting talked about in a negative light. And I know like the on-the-court product, again, is far lesser in extent than things culturally where you're being dragged into lawsuits. But man, I mean, again, like the, you know, just kind of to not to beat a dead horse, but I'm far less concerned about what's happening between two consenting adults, despite it being morally wrong by a lot of people's opinions. I'm much more concerned by the security risks and the accusations of discrimination. Like that type of shit, there's no place for that. But
guns and knives, Chris.
Guns and knives, Mike.
Literal guns and knives making it to the arena. And I have season tickets, so that doesn't give me a whole lot of good faith. If it is truly a situation where this person gave this presentation showing results of, you know, unmarked police officers bringing in weapons to an arena that has 20 plus thousand fans. We already talk about America as a melting pot, unfortunately, for mass murders. And that has been going on for a number of years. So when you start putting together people into such, I mean, arenas are big, but still at the end of the day, that's a fishbowl for, you know, more catastrophic things to happen again. Yeah, that's a bad look. And you hope that they saw, if it truly was, once again, speculation, if it was an issue, they addressed it and they hopefully move forward with the proper protocol. But if it truly is a situation where they were just like, why are you bringing this up to us? You're demoted. Stop looking into that kind of stuff. Then those are way different discussions that we have to have at the end of the day.
Yeah. It just seems ridiculous. It's like you bring in someone to, do a report on the fire safety in your building. And then they say, oh, these are all the weak points. It's like, you're fired. I'm not going to listen to you. And then a fire breaks out and it's like, whose fault was it? It was like, it was your fault because you didn't listen to. And I know that's not a analogy.
We had no idea.
Yeah. Who could have seen this coming? I mean, you're right. Everyone knows the reputation of America. With great freedom comes great responsibility. And it's just like when we were in elementary school, it just takes one bad kid or bad person to ruin it for the rest of us. And the least the Suns can do is have their security be well established and tight so that people that are coming feel safe at the arena. And man, I know there have been a couple of games we've gone to where I've got through security. I'm like, that felt a little too easy, you know?
I like how you just did a little switch up of the famous Uncle Ben quote. You said with great power comes great responsibility. Yes. You said with great freedom. I mean, freedom is power at the end of the day. So it totally makes sense. And I'm 100% aligned with you on that, Chris.
I like it. Maybe we'll put it on a t-shirt, sell it on the VSP shop. But enough about, well, I guess this next Suns topic depends on your perspective. But I was going to say enough about the negative. But the Suns are searching for their next head coach with new GM Brian Gregory, looking to hire probably an assistant coach. Or definitely going to be a first-time head coach. It looks like from this candidate list, they're all assistant coaches right now. I'll just give a brief rundown of the short list here. You got Sean Sweeney, Dallas Mavericks assistant, David Fizdale, Phoenix Suns assistant, James Borrego, New Orleans Pelicans, Johnny Bryant, Cleveland Cavaliers, Jordan Ott, Cleveland Cavaliers, Steve Hetzel, Brooklyn Nets, Mike Anori, Minnesota Timberwolves, Dave Bliss, Oklahoma City Thunder, and Chris Quinn of the Miami Heat. You'll notice that two of the names on that list are currently still working for teams in the playoffs. So I'd imagine being able to interview them hasn't probably been super easy. I just find it interesting that Dave Fizdale made it on this list. I don't necessarily hate Dave Fizdale. I did like it when he was hired as an assistant, but he was hired as an assistant under Frank Vogel and then stayed on under Mike Budenholzer. So now if you give Dave Fizdale the job, it's like, what was it? Matt Ishbia promised in his postseason press conference or exit interview, whatever you want to call it. He promised that there would be these all big changes. Big changes are coming to Phoenix. Don't worry. We're going to switch things up. And then right off the bat, he brings in Gregory, the new GM from internal. He was the head of player programming, I believe it was. I don't think many people even really still know what that is. I know a lot of it was helping rookies assimilate into the NBA and, you know, helping with teams and their players and their families and whatnot. But point is, you keep an internal guy and just promote him. Now, if you're looking at promoting David Fizdale to head coach, these aren't sweeping changes. So I don't know if Fizdale's just on this list to kind of, you know, reward him for sticking around through two tough, regimes with the Phoenix Suns and being like, you know, helping him bolster his resume. Like, yeah, he's been a head coach before with Memphis, been an assistant around the league, was considered for a head coach position by the Suns. And then it allows him to go on elsewhere and have that on his resume. But I don't know, Mike, I was bringing up that a couple of these names, Mike Anori and Dave Bliss, are on teams that are still in the playoffs. Who's jumping out to you on this list? What do you think of this? I keep saying short list, but it's nine names.
I know. But you also have to think about, I think they interviewed like 17 or 18 different candidates. So as everybody was saying, the net was cast wide and far, far and wide. But the thing that I am positive and liking about Chris is a good amount of these guys are coming from winners and teams that have been pretty successful over the past couple of seasons. Now, I will be honest with the people. I haven't done a lot of homework specifically on all of these guys, and especially as they're not no names, but unless you're a fan of the team specifically, how often do you truly know of assistant coaches unless they're like ex-players? Like, I know Jared Dudley has been on Jason Kidd's staff for a while, but I've heard good things about Sean Sweeney, I think is a positive. Once again, as well, Dave Bliss and Mike Anori. Those are probably the three that I've had my eye on the most to start. But once again, this is literally just the start. Like, these names just kind of started floating around, you know, over the past couple of days. So as things start to trickle down and we get a clearer picture of kind of who's in the last, you know, line of interviews, we'll probably have more of an open-eyed stance in regard to who our preference might be at the end of the day. Chris Quinn, I think, is also another good one with Miami Heat. But I think when I came back, I kind of heard you on the tail end talking about David Fizdale and possibly, you know, he's probably built some goodwill after having to go through the past 2 years with this Phoenix Suns club and this disaster of, you know, a coaching room, if you want to call it that, with Frank Vogel and Mike Budenholzer. But one thing that I've also been hearing, and I think I can align with as well, Chris, is that I was hoping a little bit more for like change, right? Brian Gregory is not change. Brian Gregory is a promotion. He's somebody, yes, he was only around for 1 year. I guess in the grand scheme of things, you can call it change because the guy has literally zero experience in being a GM. But if you're looking at David Fizdale and he's one of those top five, top three, you know, guys left for the candidacy, I'm worried because you need fresh blood in here at some point. And also, I can't remember specifically of these two guys. I think two of them have Michigan State ties. If we're just going the Michigan State route, dude, that's another situation where it doesn't seem like Matt Ishbia has learned his lesson that he needs to get people in here who have done it before. He's going down the route of, these are my guys. I'm the one who knows how to do it. And since he's taken ownership of this team, what do we know is a blatant fact? He just doesn't know how to do it yet. We're going to give him yet.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm not opposed to giving guys a first opportunity. You know, you don't know if you're good at it until you try it, but it does make me nervous that we have a first-time GM with little to no experience in this kind of position. And you're going to bring in a head coach with no head coaching experience, which again, I'm honestly more worried about the GM with zero experience than I am the head coach with zero experience. The David Fizdale thing, it would have to be a hell of a pitch, man. They'd have to really sell the fans on that. Like, hey, Fiz is close with the players. They respected him through the Vogel and Budenholzer era. He deserves a shot because the players like him and they already have a rapport. So, yeah, we're kind of starting over, but we're not starting completely over with a complete stranger. I could see, you know, playing devil's advocate, I could see that being the argument. But I agree. I was trying to find it at the beginning of the show to have it ready, but I don't know who the two guys were with the Michigan ties, but it's bad, man. If they go that route, if it ends up being one of the guys, whoever the two guys are with Michigan ties, it's bad optically. Like, I don't care how good of coaches they are necessarily. I think, you know, the HBO needs to start worrying about optics a little bit more, because the fans are going to start to turn on him, especially the, you know, once if the Suns start the season and they're not doing so good, it's going to be on their head. I will share real quick. John Gambadoro has a pretty close ear on things in the Valley, and his short list, he gave, I think four names here. I think there was a fifth one that he said that he believes the Suns are heavily considering. And that was Mike Anori, Chris Quinn, Jordan Ott, and Sean Sweeney. I want to say Steve Hetzel might have been the fifth name, but I can't remember. Those four for sure. Those first four for sure. So we'll see. We're expecting that news to come down, I think, before the end of the month, definitely before the draft happens. And it's, again, we've talked about it. It's good that they're being patient, but at the same time, like, people want to know. We're on the edge of our seat, and we want to get rolling with this stuff. But that's the head coach. We'll keep you updated here on one of our Tuesday streams, or past the outlet. We've been doing that once a month, I think. We'll probably try and keep that trend up. But Mike, the last bit of Suns news we need to discuss tonight is the ever occurring rumors of where Kevin Durant is going to play next season. Oh my goodness, the rumors are abound. And my favorite, and I'm being hyperbolic here, it's actually my least favorite that I was just hearing about this morning, is a trade with the 76ers. This might not be the best article, but a trade with the 76ers that would have Paul George coming to Phoenix with the third overall pick for Kevin Durant. I hate everything about it. Like, the prospect of Bradley Beal and Paul George being on the same team, like, you might as well just have Devin Booker out there all by himself playing 1-on-5. Not to mention, Paul George doesn't like Devin Booker. Devin Booker doesn't like Paul George. There's bad blood there. I mean, like, this is just like ridiculous BS rumors that aren't going to come to fruition, right? Talk me off the ledge.
These are media outlets who must just be new to the game, trying to stir up some possibilities with the fact, understanding that Joel Embiid is probably on his last lifeline in Philadelphia, knowing that Kevin Durant is a big piece that needs to be moved from the Phoenix Suns this offseason, and thinking that Paul George is an expendable piece. These are something, if you sweeten the pot with the number 3 overall pick, maybe Phoenix will bite at it. But Chris, you already said it. Are these people stupid? Have you been paying attention to anything that's happened between Devin Booker and Paul George going back to the 2021 Western Conference Finals? Even going back further than that, those guys do not like each other. And you're telling me that one of your main trade pieces is bringing in Paul George, who, Chris, at the end of the day, might have a worse deal than Bradley Beal, right? Consistently injured, and he's 2 years old, so he's not getting any younger. He still has 3 years left on his deal. Over the next 3 years, he's making $51.6 million, $54 million, and then on his last player option that last year, which, of course, it's going to be the same thing with Bradley Beal, he's going to be so broken and so far from the player that he ever was. He's going to opt into that $56.5 million for the 2027-2028 season. You can't bring that kind of person into the Valley thinking that you're going to do a quick reset around Devin Booker and hopefully you hit on the number 3 overall pick. I know it's going to be a good player, but is it going to be a transcendent type of player that this team needs? Because bringing in Paul George is not transcendent. You're taking steps back because Paul George is not a good player anymore. He is an average NBA player who doesn't truly love the game. Okay, that's just the truth of it. Okay, he's transitioned his love to more of a media outlet. No, I'm not jumping on the kill Paul George train right now, but with what this team has gone through over the past 2 seasons, with the inability to come together as a team, the leadership squanderings, people going at each other's throats, people not talking to each other, you think that Devin Booker and Paul George are magically going to just come together as guys who are now both in their 30s. Paul George, a little bit older, has been in this league. He's going to change his ways now and be buddy-buddy with him. No, it's not happening. Yeah, as soon as I saw this one come about as well, Chris, I just utterly scoffed. Because even the number three pick is just not enough to take on. If you're talking about a straight swap for those two things in Kevin Durant, get the hell out of here. I'd rather go to Golden State and get their haul of mediocre players than bring in Paul George, honestly.
Yeah, and I also hate that one. We might be able to touch on that a little bit. It was I think Jonathan Kuminga, Buddy Hield, Pojinski, who's on my Never Bet Again list, a vending machine, three jars of pickles, and a team trainer or something like that. It was terrible. It was not, I think Jonathan Kuminga averaged like 15 points a game this season, but I don't think he's a good piece for the long-term future of this organization. And I'll get to more dissecting that thought, but I do want to, you know, stay on track as much as possible. I tend to get off track a bit, but you're absolutely right with what you said there. This is just this guy, Adam Aronson for Philly Voice Staff, just a Philadelphia fan with his eyes on Kevin Durant, thinking he would go great with Tyrese Maxey and Joel Embiid. And who could we give up for him? Oh, we could give him Paul George and the number three overall pick. And with that pick, you get Ace Bailey, VJ Edgecombe, Jeremiah Fears, Trey Johnson. Mike, the problem with all those guys is they play a guard position, and we don't really need a guy to take Devin Booker's job unless you're getting rid of Devin Booker, which you're not going to do. So immediately, podcast P for Kevin Durant. You laid it out perfectly. It doesn't make any sense. If Brian Gregory does pull the trigger on that somehow, it doesn't sound like it's an offer, but if that were to manifest and Philly was interested in that, which I think they'd probably be interested in getting rid of Paul George's contract and only having 1 year of Kevin Durant, then Matt Ishbia, Brian Gregory, and the Phoenix Suns are just suckers. And instead of talking about a 3 to 5 year rebuild, we're talking about a 10 to 15 year rebuild at that point. And I'm not trying to be dramatic or over exaggerate, but going to take some deep breaths. Go ahead, Mike. Go ahead.
Well, I'm saying, Chris, I don't know if you're being dramatic in that kind of situation, because the other issue, if you're bringing back Paul George, the purpose of getting rid of Kevin Durant is, yeah, we need to kind of do a little bit of a reset, but we also have to get under the second luxury so we can start kind of handling some of our own picks and start garnering, you know, picks back in trades. Like, this isn't about bringing in another $50 million guy to pair with broken-ass Bradley Beal and Devin Booker. Come on, folks. Let's see what's happened over the past 2.5 years. This Phoenix Suns team is not ready to win anytime soon, at least the next 2-3 years. And Paul George does not change that timetable for this team. So there's no way in hell the Phoenix Suns are going to just take on a lower leverage player than Kevin Durant. They would just stick with him and see let the chips fall where they may. You better be giving me Paul George, the number three pick, a 2027 first round pick, a 2028 first round pick, and another two guards or whatever, if you want me to even think about the realm of bringing Paul George to Phoenix. Because then that's the other conversation they're going to have with our guy, Devin Booker. You know that everything is focused around him now. He's going to get the absolute okay for whatever happens at the end of the day.
100%. And I find it hard to believe that Devin Booker would be okay finishing his career on a mediocre team that never makes it deep in the playoffs ever again. It's like, it's not what he wants to do. He wants to win. I know he does. He got a taste of the finals. He wants to get back there. Obviously every player in the league wants to be in the finals, but Devin Booker is considered, you know, whether people believe it or not, I know in the Valley we do, but Devin Booker is a superstar, but he needs help. He needs at least one other person that plays at a star caliber level. And then he needs role players around him, and him and KD, perfect. If we never got Brad Beal, imagine what the Suns could do on this team with an extra $50 million. to get them some help. Cause right now they're just stuck with veteran minimum guys, and they you gotta be so lucky to go 100% and get all the right veteran minimum guys to come on this team. And then Suns were one of the like top five oldest teams in the league. You can't run those guys for a whole 82 game season and expect them to make a playoff run and do anything, because injuries are going to happen. Maybe they're not all healthy at the same time, and you don't have enough young players to carry them through the dog days. But oh boy, Mike, we're going to have all those conversations. I did want to bring up this other proposal that I saw, and if Ace Bailey and VJ Edgecombe don't do it for you, what about Cooper Flagg?
Oof. So I think where this kind of started to come from as well, I want to say it was DeMarcus Cousins came out on a podcast and talked about, oh yeah, there you go, Boogie. Love me some Boogie. What a horrible take. I mean, yes, Cooper Flagg maybe doesn't fit the window that where Dallas is trying to go right now with Kyrie Irving and Anthony Davis. But also, Boogie, remember, Kyrie's not going to play most of next year. With his knee issue, he's out, right? Didn't he tear his ACL? He's going to miss a lot of time next season. Yep. He might only play like 20 games. Anthony Davis is always kind of injured to a certain extent, but has been better over the past couple of seasons. I still think there's a number of decent years left in Anthony Davis's tank. But, I mean, what? So you're going to go Kevin Durant, Anthony Davis, and hope to come out of the West? The West that's going to continue to reload and get better. The West where all of these other superstars seem to be leaving. I mean, Chris, what's going to happen with Giannis? I wouldn't be surprised if somehow he finds himself in the West. And then the Spurs have the number two pick and are going to get better as well. Like, you go with the surefire number one overall player who could possibly be transcendent. I think he has all the tools and measurables to be one of the best players, top 10, top 15 players in the league by sometime and some point in his career. So I don't think leveraging that for what's going to be a 37-year-old Kevin Durant, hopefully putting it together with Kyrie Irving off of a major knee issue, and Anthony Davis, who literally stepped on the floor for 15 minutes in Dallas and broke himself and was out for multiple weeks. Come on, what a far cry. But this is where we are. We're not even in the off season, which is crazy, dude. We're already hearing these ridiculous speculations about trading the number one pick. And I'm pretty sure Dallas already came out and said, yeah, we're excited to have Cooper Flagg, like within 24 hours of them winning the NBA draft lottery. So, but hey, at least it gives us something to talk about, right? Even if it is the most ridiculous shit that can be conjured up.
Yeah, and I'm curious, like, how often this type of speculation ever, you know, comes to fruition at any capacity. I just had to look it up because I was curious if a number one draft pick had ever been traded. And I don't know if I asked the question correctly, but it looks like the last time was 92-93. No, I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe I'd have to look up and not do this on the fly.
Well, I think we were talking about that on PTO. I think that was Chris Webber.
Yeah. 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 Chris Webber for,
he was drafted by the Orlando Magic, and then he was traded to the Golden State Warriors, only played 1 year with the Warriors, and then was moved to the Washington Wizards, who I think were the Bullets at the time.
Yeah. Yeah, so okay, that was right then, because it was trying to say that Markel Fultz, but I think it was just saying had a number one overall pick ever been traded at any point in their career, which is not what I was trying to ask it.
Yeah,
gotta be careful with the AI. But no, but back on track. You're right. The fact that the season isn't even over. I mean, it's over for the Suns and many other teams, but the NBA season more broadly is not over, and a lot more pieces have to fall to even get to that point. I do think that the Giannis trade possibility is throwing a massive wrench in the prospect of moving Kevin Durant. Also kind of how the playoffs shook out. I think the way Houston battled against Golden State, you know, they might not need as much help as they thought. They might want to stick with their young core. A lot of people were hoping that the Knicks would kind of implode, so maybe they thought they needed a Kevin Durant, but Knicks are in the Eastern Conference Finals now. looking pretty good and looking like they might not need a Kevin Durant. So it's like where that's why you're starting to hear Philadelphia and Dallas. And the prospect that scares me the most, I think you're right, Mike. I think Giannis is coming out west. I think Giannis is absolutely coming out west. And I think he's going to San Antonio to play with Victor Wembanyama. And that fucking terrifies me, man. The thought of those two guys on the same team with other young pieces, Stephon Castle. Did he win Rookie of the Year?
Stephon? He did. Spurs just got back-to-back rookie of the Years. And they're going to pair Giannis with the super freak of Victor Wembanyama. I mean, you can't be serious, dude. I'm also not ready for the Spurs to be like juggernauts again, even though it has been, 10, 12 years?
It's been a while, yeah.
Still, I'm just not ready. They won so much, man. Like, that's why I like what's been happening in the NBA, right? I think this is for sure the first time it's going to be a new champion, but it's also going to be like seven straight different winners in the NBA, which is a far cry from where we were in the mid 2010s when it was Cleveland versus Golden State every season, right? For five straight years. But yeah, I mean, Kevin Durant at the end of the day is going to find himself a new home. Unfortunately, I don't think the Phoenix Suns are going to be able to really talk themselves into a situation of keeping him around and running things back, even with a new coach in tune. Because, guys, we did that last year. And, Chris, you already talked about it. We had to do the minimum guys, whatever. They're not difference makers. You can't win that way in today's league. And I will touch back on one of the things that you talked about, I think, earlier as well. This will be my last point. The Brooklyn Nets team with James Harden, Kevin Durant, and Kyrie Irving were the ones who shot the super teams. And then the Phoenix Suns big three were the ones who put the pillow over their face and killed the super teams for good.
Hey, I don't think you're wrong. I think that's why the Cooper flag for KD one kind of intrigues me, because it gives the Suns a young piece that they can develop for the next 2-3 years. And then Flag and Booker, you know, in a couple years could be a really good tandem. And it also makes Dallas to be the potential last super team with Kyrie, Anthony Davis, and Kevin Durant. That's wishful thinking. I think that might be one possibly best case scenario for the Suns, but it's so far-fetched and delusional that I don't think it's going to happen. Mike, I am prepared, and I'm glad you're sitting down. I'm prepared for the Suns to run it back.
Yikes, dude. Golly, don't you dare put that out into the ether like that. If the Suns run it back, and you know what's BS about it too? If the Suns run it back, I can't pull my season tickets. I already have down payments on everything, so screwed no matter what. If the Suns here's the real thing. If the Suns run it back next season and we have a similar or worse result, Chris, I'm going to have a conversation with my dad about not getting our season tickets again the next season. And I took on, you know, the second seat with him a few seasons back, but he's had season tickets since the Madhouse on McDowell, Chris, for 35, I mean, longer than I've been alive.
Yeah.
37, yeah. 38 years. So that's a tough thing staring me in the face as a Phoenix Suns fan with the possibility of this. Because, yeah, going back to it, we're in an unprecedented situation with a guy who has never done this at all before in Brian Gregory. So you have to have some kind of nerves in regard to what this team itself and the product on the floor is going to look like next year. But like we had talked about when he was first announced, I'm still going to give him some grace. I'm going to give him some leeway to show us what he's about. So we'll see. Yeah, it's going to be small, but we'll give him some.
Sure. We'll give him some. Because he hasn't made any moves yet. He hasn't done anything yet outside of his press conference. But every move, I think him and Ishbia know that every move he makes is going to be under the microscope. And it sounds like it's not going to be him. I would hope it's not going to be him or Ishbia solely making decisions, which I think there are pros and cons to having multiple voices in the room and having, you know, a more of a democracy about it. But I think it's, you know, if you don't, you end up in potentially Nico Harrison situations where you're shipping out Luka in the dead of night and getting Anthony Davis back and totally out of touch with your fan base. But Mike, that is scary for you. Like, you do vote with your dollar. That's something my wife loves to say a lot. And if you're not giving the Suns your money, if fans stop showing up to games, if people are not renewing their season tickets, that'll tell Matt Ishbia that fans are not happy with the product. Now, I'm sure they'll still have a good amount of fans coming from when the good teams come in, the transplant, you know, the Bulls, the Lakers, they always do well here. But it's a situation where I'm scared, man, because I could see them keeping KD, but they absolutely, no matter what, have to get rid of Bradley Beal. They have to get rid of Bradley Beal. I think Phoenix Suns fans can stomach one more year of Kevin Durant. You keep him, you see what he can do. Him and Booker have a good rapport, you know, and after this year, he's not under contract, has no player option. See what happens from there. But the Bradley Beal situation, man, like, I think we still have the whole next season and then a player option the year after that of Bradley Beal potentially being here. So you have to figure out what to do with him. And I don't know if I said this already, but I am worried about Brian Gregory being taken advantage of as a first-time GM and maybe not getting the fullest return that he possibly can for Kevin Durant. So if it's a shit return versus running it back with Kevin Durant, I think I'd rather have that, honestly, as hard as it is to say.
Yeah, this will be my last point because we got to touch on the snakes here in a second.
Yeah.
But I don't think as Suns fans, I think a lot of Suns fans are aligned. I don't think anybody really wants to trade KD, right? I mean, he's arguably the best player that has ever put on a Phoenix Suns uniform overall in the grand scheme of the National Basketball Association and the greatness that anybody has ever seen on any team. Kevin Durant is arguably the best to ever put on a Suns uniform. But we are stuck in this situation with the horrible no trade clause that Bradley Beal has and the inability for him to stay on the floor for the past 7 years. He is an untradeable contract and asset. And we have to start somewhere to try and rebuild something. So that's why it's come down to KD. I'm 100% with you, Chris. If you don't get the right return or something that's going to get you moving down the right road, even if you have to suck it up and have Bradley Beal on this team for the next two seasons, if he can be a piece that helps to some kind of success, you got to get the right return for Kevin Durant in regard to turning it into players who can make impact on this team right now. Because it's not about I'm trading for, you know, the 20th. Well, we do have to get draft capital back. But I'm not trading for some guy who doesn't have a chance of sniffing the floor for the next three seasons, which unfortunately it seems like are some of these guys that are going to have to be filled in to take on a contract like Kevin Durant. But yeah, I don't want KD to go anywhere. Thinking about trading him is making me well up a little bit. You know, I might shed a tear, but it's what we are stuck with. And it's what the decisions that Matt Ishbia has made has put us into. So we'll see if he can rectify them.
Yeah, no, you nailed it, man. I don't. It's not what we want, but it might be what we need. We might, if we can get a good return that's going to set us up for success more than it would keeping him for one more season, then they need to do it. But I think it's a fine line that they're going to be walking. Best believe, Mike, we're going to keep some tabs on that. Sure, we'll be having opportunities to talk about that on our Tuesday streams, past the outlet specifically. So stay tuned, fellas. More news to come. But lastly, before we get out of here for this evening, we do have to talk about the Arizona Diamondbacks. We'll probably go a little long on this Saturday on the Heat Check podcast with the Diamondbacks. I know Tallman has been, he came back from Europe and now he's been on a 2-week hiatus again. Not his fault. He got the day off last week for PTO. He had other obligations tonight. He couldn't be on our Heat Check live here, but we miss him. And I know he wants to talk Arizona Diamondbacks. He wanted to be here, but we're going to do our best to fill the gap in Tallman's wake here. There is one very big topic I want to get to, but first we just got to check in with how they've been doing the past couple weeks against division opponents. They split the 4-game series with the Los Angeles Dodgers, kind of trading off 1-1, lost 1, win 1, lost 1. head to San Francisco where they won the series, keeping up the same, like this whole win loss, it was like whiplash, Mike. It was like snakes look good. Oh, snakes look bad. Oh, snakes look good. And like a couple narrow victories in there. You got a 2-1 victory against San Fran, an 8-7 victory. But hey, a win's a win. We're not going to remember these games 2 months from now. Then Colorado. This was the big one we talked about. Maybe not on a stream, but we talked about we needed to sweep this series. The Rockies are the worst team in baseball, historically bad, possibly the worst team this league has seen in the past 25 years or more. As long as I've been alive, I cannot say that I've seen a team start a season this poorly. And I've seen the White Sox play baseball. Mike, it's tough, but they won the series. So you tie the series against Los Angeles, you win against San Fran, win against Colorado. Now you're up 1-0 to start against Los Angeles. And right now, in game two, it looks like it's bottom of the fifth, I think, and it's 0-0 game, tight game. Dodgers have been plagued by injuries again, but they have 35 pitchers that they can pick from, so they always seem to be able to find talented players they can plug in there and do well. Boy, it's as you can see on this graphic, a couple of losses where the Diamondbacks scored 11 or more runs. And they lost the first time they'd ever lost a game where they scored 12 or more runs on Saturday against the Rockies. First time in franchise history. They're like 1 in 300 something, I think. Terrible, Mike. Terrible. But what is your immediate reaction to the most recent schedule here to start May?
I want to touch on that, 1 in 100 or whatever. I think I saw another one where the Diamondbacks are, after scoring 12 runs in a game, were like 238-4 all time as a franchise, and three of those losses have been this year. Looking at what's happened over the past two and a half weeks, Chris, you have to try and steer towards the positives, right? 7-4, you split the series with Los Angeles after having the possibility for going for a sweep. We blew that Friday game. I got to give a big shout out to Brandon Pfaadt, man. First guy in the majors to get to 7 wins. He's been killer. He's had a decision in all of his outings this season, and he looked great last night, except for what he's kind of continuously struggled with over his career, which is hanging a meatball or two and giving up some home runs. But the big one that you look at is that big L on Saturday, May 17th against the Colorado Rockies, where you got to start having conversations about some of these guys. Zach Gallen has just not been the same. He gives up 6 earned runs that game. And our bullpen, which has been a struggle all season, now missing, our two closing candidates for a number of weeks now with AJ Puck and Justin Martinez. I give a shout out to Shelby Miller, who stepped in and done an admirable job so far to start this season. But now we have to have conversations about guys like Ryan Thompson, who were just key components to our 2023 World Series run. I mean, Chris, over the past 7 days, his ERA is 19.29. Like, the guy can't get people out anymore. He was a key factor in that loss to the Colorado Rockies. Two-thirds of an inning, 3 earned runs off 5 hits. Jalen Beeks, who had started off great as well, was another key component. 2/3 of an inning, 4 runs on 2 hits and 3 walks. Like, what happened last night with dominating that game so much and then coming into the 9th inning to the point where there was no shot that Shelby Miller should have ever touched the mound last night? And then you look out and it's almost Shohei Ohtani up, so you have to bring in Shelby Miller. This bullpen is an issue, Chris. It's a very, very big issue. But since we've been winning more often right now, and since it's been against the division, I'm giving my hats off to a certain extent to what the Diamondbacks have been able to do to rally. You can also talk about some of these guys with their bats. Cattell's getting back into the lineup. I think he's hit 3 home runs since returning. Gabby Moreno hitting over 330 since he had his, down spurts. And guys like, Perdomo have just been absolute catalysts this entire season, tying his all-time record for home runs in a season already with 6, right? Perdomo, let's get to 20 this year, man. Let's add the power. So we're still all over the spectrum with this team, Chris, like we have been all season. At least we're starting to stretch more into, you know, the positive over 500. You were four games, 26 and 22. But there's still too many questions on the pitching side of this team where you can't have a whole lot of confidence until these guys start showing a turn for the better. And hopefully this is the start of it right now, but I'm just worried for a few of these guys, man. I don't know about you.
No, I'm definitely worried. And, you know, we're no strangers here to talking about the bullpen. We talked about it on the last roundtable. We talked about it a month ago. We're going to talk about it a month from now. It's been a problem and they need help, because you're right. Shelby Miller, only four pitches, but he had pitched the night before. And now you're talking about availability. If they need him tonight, I grant he only pitched four pitches yesterday, so you'd think he'd be good, but he got warmed up, he got up, he got going. So these are the things you got to think about, not overusing guys early in the season. And it's just, who do you go to, man? Ginkle has been largely unreliable. Jalen Beeks is streaky. Just all the pitchers, even in the starting pitching rotation, are streaky. You kind of touched on it. Gallen can only pitch well against teams from New York. Not doing good. I know Nico, friend of the show, a host of the Valley of the Suplex, is not happy with Gallen. He would use some choice words to describe Gallen's play lately. Eduardo Rodriguez has been doing so bad that they had to create an injury just to get him out of the starting rotation. They called it like shoulder inflammation. It's not a product of his poor pitching. It's a prescription. It's like, hey, take some time off, man. I mean, I don't think his shoulder's bad enough to where he genuinely needed to be on the IR. But like we saw tonight, who was it? Ryan Nelson gets the chance to take the bump. This was a guy that we talked about potentially who would have been in the starting rotation had we not gone out and gotten Corbin Burnes this offseason. So now it's really, you know, a lot of people are talking about it's on him right now to have a couple of good starts with Eduardo Rodriguez out to show that, hey, I am your guy. Maybe throw Rodriguez in the bullpen for a little while and see how I do in the starting rotation. Now, those aren't conversations we want to have for a guy we're paying as much money as we are Eduardo Rodriguez. But at this point, you gotta think of everything, because you can see on the graphic here, it's a very competitive division. We are just three games out of first, but in the fourth spot in the division. Like, that is absolutely nuts. Like, it's, I don't want to say it's unlikely, but it's possible that we see four teams from the NL West make the playoffs. We've seen three teams out of the NL West make the playoffs, and it's very possible that all three wildcard teams could be out of the NL West. It's not impossible. Long way to go. Really don't want to start talking playoffs yet, because I'm going to give myself an aneurysm here. But Mike, it's just a lot of concern to go around. Another piece that's concerned me is the long, and it shouldn't have, right? The long awaited arrival of Jordan Lawler. When were you going to bring him up? He's crushing it in AAA. He's killing it in AAA. You know, Eugenio Suarez is either hitting a home run or he's getting out. You know, what are you doing with this kid? So they bring him up last Monday. Tonight was his fourth start. I think his previous starts were at short, given Perdomo some time off. He's playing third tonight, and they're giving Gino Suarez the day off. And this is going to be the tough part. You're either going to have to give Jerry the day off, you're going to have to give Pavin Smith the day off, it's going to be Gino Suarez, where it's either he's DH, he's third base, or he's shortstop. It doesn't look like they're going to throw him in the outfield. But they could. That's something that I think has been discussed, or maybe, I don't know if Tori's spoken on it, but it's been hypothesized that this kid's young, he's an athlete, he's a ball player. You could easily give Gurriel the day off, throw Lawler in the outfield. But the bigger story is, this game included, and he's coming up to bat here pretty soon, Mike, Jordan Lawler has 9 at-bats, 6 strikeouts, 0 hits since he's been called up. I guess, To rope you into the conversation here, and because I'm genuinely curious, what concerns you the most? Him not getting as much playing time as he might need, or him not doing well in the limited time that he's had?
I think for me, the biggest thing is the inconsistency of at-bats at the major league level. The kid showed everything he needed to do at AAA. He was absolutely scalding the baseball. there was nothing less for him left for him to do. And, you know, he's an everyday player there. And he was jumping at every position, knowing what was coming when he got to the dance, right? He was going to have to jump around. But yeah, from what everybody always talked about was when Jordan Lawler gets the call up, it's for good. Like, it's not to bring him down. They never want to put him down again. But if you can't utilize him almost every single day or five days a week, you're not going to get what you need from him, and you're not going to get consistency because he's not going to be able to find his form sitting 2 days and then finally playing. I mean, Chris, yeah, look at his time frame. So he played back-to-back. He played Tuesday the 13th and Wednesday the 14th in San Francisco, and then he played in that freaking absolute just disaster on Saturday the 15th where he struck out three times against Colorado. And then now he's playing again today, 3 days later, 4 days later. Like, it's not going to work enough for a young kid who needs to get more looks, more at-bats against true major league pitching, because you can only get a certain level in the minor leagues, man. So I'm not jumping off of the bandwagon for Jordan Lawler. There still has to be concern for kind of seems the ineptitude at the plate that he's showing right now. But my same thing, it kind of goes back to what we talked about with the Phoenix Suns over the past, you know, or the mid-season where Ryan Dunn and Osu Igudora miraculously found themselves out of the rotation. How are these guys going to get better if they're not playing? You know, and then you see what happens. Your team falters. You were playing the wrong people the entire season. You should have been giving more experience to those young guys. But I understand the Arizona Diamondbacks are in win now mode, and we have guys who just top over Jordan Lawler. You have to keep Perdomo in the lineup as much as you can right now with the way that he's hitting the baseball. Cattell is starting to turn his form as well. You're gonna have to get creative. You Gino a couple more off days. You're going to have to get Lawler in that DH spot just so he's getting more at-bats. That's the biggest thing for me.
No, I agree. And even if it's, you know, people hate this term, but like the half days, right? Where you know, maybe Gino starts the game and then the last one or two at-bats, you bring in Lawler. And you can do that potentially with Perdomo as well. Give these guys some half days, because that is something that Torrey's really big on, is giving his guys a break, which I think it does help that we have, you can call it depth on this roster, you know, kind of being spoiled for choice, but it's not always necessarily the positions we want to be spoiled for choice at. You know, I'd love it if we had another good backup catcher we could rely on to hit. It seems like Jose Herrera is not the best option. We got Adrian Del Castillo down in AAA. Really liked what he did last year, but even, you know, he's a young guy, and young guys are going to be a little inconsistent. But I think you're absolutely right, Mike. It's getting Lawler the opportunities, because I don't blame him for the slow start, guys. It happens, you know, especially when you're going, it's probably, you know, you say these guys are professionals, and yeah, you're going to see professional level pitchers in AAA, but it's not even the same. Like, there are levels to this shit, for sure. I can guarantee you applies in from AAA to the majors as well. So I don't know. I think it's all going to depend on how things shake out, but I don't think you can, you know, there have been people calling for them to trade Suarez. He has a hot bat. His trade value is probably really high right now, but the way he's hitting it, I don't know if you can really do that, because he had four home runs in a game and we still lost. Like, imagine if he wasn't mashing the ball the way he is. And yeah, he does strike out a lot, and he'll have 0 for 4 games here and there, but he's a power bat that you can count on to hit you a couple home runs, at least one every week, it seems like. So I'd much rather keep him around for the time being, especially I do believe it is the last year of his contract. But like I said, we're going to get into this on Heat Check on Saturday. I don't mean to keep plugging that too much, but the last thing I'll say on the D-backs is there are a lot of people on the fire Torrey Lovello crowd. We hear every year it rolls around. I've been a part of that crowd. I've been a voice in that crowd. I'm willing to, in May of the season, give him a little more grace. Now, there have been some questionable decisions already, sure, but that's what happens when a team is losing and not performing to expectations. Let's see how he does through the rest of this month, through June, and then in July, if things are still bad, if we're still hovering around 500, then it's, I think it's more fair to have that conversation. But I think for now, we need to be a little bit patient, understand that he's managing this bullpen as best he possibly can, and he can't pitch, he can't throw out the same two guys every night. He just can't. He has to mix it up. He has to utilize his whole bullpen, and it's not entirely his fault that they're letting him down time and time again. But I'm curious, Mike, if you kind of are in alignment with me on that, or if you're one of those voices in the crowd.
We are aligned, but that doesn't mean that I'm not going to wear my Tory's Gonna Tory shirt on a Heat Check podcast this Saturday. Wow, Chris is giving Torey Lovello a grace period. Who would have guessed, man? Notoriously, if you guys don't know, Chris, I don't think is a really like a head coach fan in general of like anybody. He's always kind of like on the fence of their decision, their decisions and what's kind of going through their head in regards to game plans and that kind of stuff. But yeah, I'm 100% aligned on that. I guess I'll touch on one last thing before I'll pass it over to you so you can do the outro. The last couple of things is Jordan Lawler. Now that I think about it, when he came up in 2023, he did struggle from the plate as well. So he needs to turn around quicker rather than later, or else you get the stigma and you get labeled, which is not something we want from him because we know this kid can be good. I'm looking for Ryan Nelson to take the helms and slot himself into this number four position in the starting rotation, because one thing we can do great, it seems like, Chris, is make trades or pinpoint people to come in on the offensive side or outfield who can be difference makers and change this team and change the outlook of this team. When you think about guys like Lourdes Gurriel, for as much flack as we want to give him, Gabby Moreno, Eugenio Suarez, you know, we do great on that end. But when it comes to bringing in pitching, starting pitching specifically, I don't know, this front office keeps swinging and missing. Because Eduardo Rodriguez is no bueno, man. He is so inconsistent. He does what he can to keep this team in games. But I literally have zero confidence every time he comes out where I'm like, you know what? We're going to get a two-hit gem from Erod. The only thing that I'm thinking is just – don't give up more than four runs, Erod. And that's the wrong mentality to have for you starting pitching. So we need to start hitting on some of these guys. And the last thing I will say, it does seem like Corbin Burns is turning it around. He had one of his best outings, if not his best outing, against the Dodgers in that first four-game series that we had against them. And then threw another gem the other day, a seven-inning shutout. So starting to get our money's worth it with that. But Chris, I'm excited to dive in more to what's going on with the Diamondbacks with our own VSP Tallman on Saturday. So you guys make sure to tune in next week. We'll keep hitting you with it.
100%. Expect that the middle to end of next week, next Tuesday, because you guys know every Tuesday at 7 p.m. we go live right here on our YouTube channel. We're going to be doing a trivia stream. Yes, it's the return of Valley Trivia Plug. And Mr. Benjamin will be hosting this time, which means you're going to see Gumpin' It. Yes, me and Ian back for our second appearance. We're undefeated. I think you can call it that. Undefeated, 1-0. We're gonna find an opponent. We're going to take them on. So you'll have to tune in, see how that goes. Like I mentioned, you can always come back, check out the replay here on YouTube, or listen audio only on all podcast streaming services. Mike, you're right. Typically the resident pessimist, not always the most optimistic, but It's my mid-year resolution to maybe give more grace, be more optimistic, you know, be the light you want to see in the world. So we'll have to see how I keep that up. You know, you guys can tune in to see how that goes. Also, follow us at AZ_VSP on Instagram, X, TikTok, and so much more. Our links are in the description. We have a Facebook page as well to go along with that Instagram page. So make sure you're following us so you can keep up to date on all the Valley Sports action. But we're going to go ahead and get out of here. For Mr. Benjamin, I'm Chris Patrick, and we'll see you guys next time. Peace.